Blog Talk Radio.
Scanner footage from San Bernardino, California, just this past Wednesday, another mass shooting in this country. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everyone, for hanging out with me today, TGIF, as always. And as you can imagine, we have got a ton of stuff to get to. And the weekend is here. The weekend is upon us. And that is a good thing. And please feel free to call in here and talk to me if you like. The phone number is 347-857-2620, 347-857-2620. And, of course, the chat room is always open. It's 24-hour. Well, okay, no, not really. It's only just an hour while the show's on. But, hey, it sounded good. But, again, that was what you just heard was footage from the San Bernardino, California 911 operator, dispatchers, of how this horrific shooting started to unfold on Wednesday morning. And gosh, there's information after information after information that is pouring out about this, and it's hard to keep track of all and keep on top of it all. And But what we have here, the latest here, I guess where I can start at here is the basic facts here. On Wednesday morning, two people burst into a social services center in San Bernardino, California, which I believe is about 50 or 60 miles. I could be wrong. 50 or 60 miles east of Los Angeles, and this was a center that helps provide services and helps people with disabilities, people with Down syndrome, things of that nature. And they were what could be more innocent than that, than just a bunch of people at a center that they all frequent for services and what have you, celebrating Christmas, having a holiday party. And these two individuals, let's see, we have names here, of course. They are Saeed Farouk. He is 27, I believe, and who is believed to be his wife, Tashfeen Malik. She is 28, I believe. And they burst into the center and started shooting, just started spraying the place. And at last count, I believe we had we have 15 dead right now, and I believe about 20, 25, could give or take a few, injured and still hospitalized at this point. And You know, there was a lot of speculation initially as to what the motive was for this. These two people being of Middle Eastern descent, the first thing on everyone's mind was this an act of terrorism? And was this some sort of workplace violence? You know, there have been many a theory bandied about here as the investigation goes forth. And again, it's we're still very, 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 very early into it. And but I think that right now, all indicators are leading that this was a terrorist attack, that this was an act of terrorism. And you know, it's hard for me to figure out where to begin here with it, because again, there is so much information here. But maybe the best thing I can do here is go to a phone call here and find out who is on the other line here. Hey, you're on with Becky Noble in Conservative Cauldron Radio. Who am I talking to? Hello, is there anybody there?
Hello. Hello, how are you doing? This is Q.
Hi.
Listening. I was waiting for you to finish your sentence. I was listening to your viewpoint.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, what's going on? Glad you called in.
I appreciate it. It's just a very, very weird world that we live in now.
It is. You're right.
You know, I will say off the top, before hearing the rest of what you have to say, I will say that I personally believe that this all started with this, I call it the Reagan Visa and Clinton NAFTA crap. Is you just got too much allowing individuals into the country willy nilly, and
I would agree with that.
It's now backfired. I don't hold Reagan not responsible with his visa bill. You know that he increased people coming in and created the illegal problem. That you know. And I look at NAFTA with the stupidity that Clinton and Gore, well, really that was Gore, to be honest. It was more Gore than anybody. Clinton signed it, but it was Gore championing that nonsense. And when Bush 2 opened the floodgates, I just don't understand.
You know, so there's to go around. And in both administrations, I'll give you that, in Republican and Democrat administrations. And yeah, Ronald Reagan did there was the whole amnesty thing there. And so yeah, there's some blame to go around on all sides. And I think, you know, that a lot of people are going to connect these kind of things with, you know, if there's, you know, take for instance the Tsarnaev brothers in Boston. You know, they were refugees.
And welfare
recipients. Right. And so I think that it's going to be connected. It's going to be something that people look at. It's all going to be intertwined. You know what I mean? And it's definitely going to be I'm having a brain fart here. It's going to be something that is a consideration in the upcoming presidential election, definitely. And but you're right. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I didn't get your name.
Q.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You're right. We're living in weird times. We're living in really weird times. And you know, it's. I don't know. I think maybe just talking about it and people relating. You know, maybe this all sounds kind of squishy and everything, but people relating their feelings about it and talking about it is one way that people are gonna. Get through it, but I'm going to let you go because I got lots and lots of stuff to get
ahead.
To. But I really thank you for calling and thank you so much for listening. And please don't go anywhere. I mean, Hank, keep on listening and keep on calling in. Thank you so much, Q.
Appreciate it.
That was our buddy Q calling in and talking about something maybe that is going to be looked at as being connected here, and that is. How are people, you know, you can take the 9/11 hijackers. They were all here on visa. They were all here initially legally. They were all here on visas, and they were all here they were all here legally. And again, this is maybe another loophole. Well, you know, liberals are so busy talking about gun loopholes because, again, this was another layer of discussion that came in within minutes of this happening. Of course, every liberal known to man found a microphone or a computer chat room or Facebook or social media, whatever it was, and went on to moan and groan and opine about gun control. And the thing is here, and that this is yet another part, there are so many layers to this investigation that these two individuals, authorities don't believe at this point that these two individuals actually bought the weapons that they used in this attack, that there is a third individual involved here who actually did the legwork and bought the weapons that provided these two individuals for their attack. And so that's another thing that's being looked into. But maybe while we're looking at loopholes and maybe while we're talking about immigration reform, talking about, as Q just said, just letting people into the country willy-nilly, that maybe things like, and I've always thought, the whole anchor baby, when people come here, when women come here, be it from Guatemala or Mexico or anywhere in the world, I'm just naming off countries, women who come here from anywhere else in the world and come here to give birth, and they come here and they have their children, and those children are automatically American citizens. There's no other country on the planet that does that, and I think that's a loophole that needs to be looked at, definitely. And again, maybe this whole loop of this guy was an American citizen. Saeed Farouk was an American citizen. What I saw was that he was born in Chicago. His parents were of Pakistani descent, but he was born in Chicago. That makes him an American citizen. And again, maybe that goes back to the whole anchor baby thing. But his wife, maybe this is one of the things, another loophole that needs to be looked at is that she was here on something called MK. She was here on a visa, and basically what it is a they call it a fiance visa, and she was here on a K-1. I'm sorry, she had applied for and received a K at the American Embassy in Islamabad in May of 2014 for a K-1 visa. And basically what that is, what I just said, is a fiance visa. She was here because she came here because she was going to marry an American citizen. And so, yeah, I think that Q has a point here, and that maybe this is another thing, another loophole. You know, while liberals are jumping up and down talking about gun show loopholes, maybe this is something that conservatives can start talking about, that these loopholes need to be looked at, and whether they need to be closed, whether they need to be reformed, whatever the solution is, this is something that we need to look at. But again, there is topic here, but again, I think it's we're going to find that people are connecting all of this. And one of the things that is being looked at, this is the latest I have here from Fox News, is that, and I heard this last night, that as I was watching coverage of this, that they think that what happened here is that Saeed Farouk took a trip to Saudi Arabia that they're looking at very closely. And that was in September of 2013. And they believe that that is where he met and became engaged to Tashfeen Malik, who is his wife. And because, again, like I said, she had applied for a K-1 visa at the American Embassy, which is basically what they call a fiancé visa. She was going to marry an American citizen, and he wanted, of course, to bring her here. And so that was how she arrived in the country legally. And but they believe that he went back to Saudi Arabia in July of 2014, where they were married, because according to the Saudi embassy in Washington, they have confirmed that his trip to Saudi Arabia lasted 9 days, and that they were in fact married on August 16th, 2014. They were married here in the United States in Riverside County, California. That is according to their marriage license, and both listed on their marriage license their religion as Muslim. So, again, you know, maybe this is something else that needs to be looked at. But the thing that I have here said, there's just so much information swirling around about this, that investigators are starting to really look seriously at the fact that it may have been Saeed Farouk's wife Tashfeen Malik, she was the one who was radicalizing him. And because I think the first thing that jumped out at everyone was that not only was this a male-female team, but this was a husband and wife team that did this. And we haven't seen that up till now. And I think one of the questions maybe that we need to start looking at, because we know that these terrorist organizations, these terrorist cells, and even the bigger groups like ISIS, Al-Qaeda, what have you, they seem to be always one step ahead of us, and they always seem to be constantly changing the game and changing how it's done. And my question is, and I can't believe that it is not a question on the minds of a lot of other people, is just exactly how prevalent is this becoming, where the women are radicalizing the guys? You know, is it just a thing of, and maybe this is going to sound like I'm really super simplifying this, but is it just a question of, you know, when guys are interested in a woman and they all of a sudden they're interested in whatever she's interested in so they can follow her around? Or, you know, is it something more than that? How are these women? First of all, look at what ISIS and groups like it. Look at what they advocate. They advocate that women are barely human beings, much less second class citizens and human beings. But, you know, they advocate things like you can sell a woman for a cow, and, you know, you can them whenever you want. And like I said, that they're barely human beings. And what is fascinating to me, and maybe it's because I'm looking at it with a Western mentality, a Western mindset, is that how do they get women to buy into this? Isn't there some, I guess I'd have to talk to a psychologist or something, that how do they bypass, there has to be some innate sense of, even a person who barely has any self-esteem about themselves has to have some basic level of self-worth. How are they getting past that? How are they getting by that? I think within all of the political machinations and all of the law enforcement machinations and all of those things, is somebody looking at that? What are they doing? What are they saying? I'm sure they are. There's people who are studying these recruiting videos. And also, by the way, we also knew that it was also reported that these two individuals were wearing portable GoPro cameras as they carried out this horrific shooting. And the first and only thing that said to me when I heard that was they were making a recruiting video. Out of this carnage and out of this horrific, violent massacre that these two people carried out, this was a recruiting video. This is how they do it. They had fully planned on surviving this and going to pick up their six-month-old baby and going home and uploading this massacre so it could be used as a recruiting video. I don't know what else they could have possibly been doing with it. And one of the other things also that is being looked at is that when police raided their home and started going through what was in their home, what was in the house, you know, looking for any kind of evidence as to motive. And, well, you know, I think, well, everybody but Barack Obama in this country knows what the motive at this point was. I think we can all make a pretty safe guess that, and I heard Fox News' Adam Housley report on this last night, and what he said basically that authorities believe is going, that went on here, was that they targeted this center, the social services center. You know, you have the most helpless of all of us among us in this group of people. You have people with maybe physical, not just physical disabilities, but mental and developmental disabilities. You have people with Down syndrome. You have people like that. Those are the most vulnerable among us. And so they knew that there wasn't going to be anyone fighting back. Not to mention the fact that it was a county building, a government building. Therefore, it probably had a big honking sign on the front door that said gun-free zone. I have much more to say on that later on as I get into this. But so they picked this target, the most vulnerable people in society, because they knew there wasn't going to be any fighting back. And what Fox News' Adam Housley was reporting on last night was that a lot of times people like that will do this and they get a success under their belt, and then they go on to what they really want to target, because because of all the ammunition and all of the firepower and all of the things that have been found in the home, and I will get to this in a minute after we come back from a break. It wasn't just these two people. There's a network behind these people, I think, that we're going to find out about, and that they were well funded, and that's another thing that we're going to talk about here in a minute. Like I said, we've got so much to talk about regarding this shooting and the basic facts, what we're finding out about these people, the political fallout from it, just you name it. It's, oh my God, it's all wrapped up into one giant ball. But we're gonna try to get to it all. And so stick around. I'm gonna take a really quick break, and I will come back, and we will get into the rest of it. Plus, I've got some gun stats here, and I've got the FBI says that background checks they're doing a booming business in background checks. And but we'll get into all of it in just a minute. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you for hanging out with me today, and I will be right back. Don't go anywhere. Stay close. We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for chilling with me this morning, this lovely, bright, sunny, chilly Friday morning here in St. Louis. Hope it's nice and bright and sunny where you are. TGIF, we have made it to the weekend, of course. It is upon us, and we have lots and lots to talk about, as you can well imagine. The biggest topic, of course, is this horrific massacre, I don't know what else you could call it, in on Wednesday morning in San Bernardino, California. And before the break, we had a caller named Q who brought up an interesting point, and what he said was that, you know, he was kind of tired of people who were being led into this country willy-nilly. And I think he has a point here in that this, well, the one of the shooters here, Saeed Farouk, was an American citizen, but his wife was not. And she was here on a K-1 visa, which is commonly known as a fiancé visa. And while we're talking about bringing in Syrian refugees and people that are basically unvettable, there's no way to find out who these people are, maybe this is another thing that needs to be looked at while we're looking at things like women coming into this country to have babies so that the babies will automatically be American citizens. Maybe this is another loophole that needs to be looked at. I think it was a very interesting point that when people are bringing wives, husbands, fiancés, significant others into the country, just to, you know, what more can we do to maybe tweak this loophole, make it a little better, make it a little more efficient? I would agree that that's maybe something that we definitely need to look at. But again, this investigation is very, very early on. And one of the things that authorities are looking at is the money trail here, because some of the things that were found upon authorities entering this couple's home, that they found plenty of high-powered weapons, that could pierce body armor, thousands of rounds of ammunition for the high-powered weapons, including 2,500. Forgive me, because I don't know a lot about guns, and maybe some of you can help me out here. Including 2,500 223 caliber rounds. There were three pipe bombs found detonated in the building where the shooting occurred. There were thousands of tools in the home that could be used to make additional bombs. And one of the descriptions of this couple's home by authorities was, quote, an IED factory, that it was a virtual bomb factory that these people had in their home. Of course, like I was talking about before the break, they were wearing GoPro cameras and body armor, both of these individuals. And again, that automatically said to me that that's a recruiting video. And in the search of the home, again, turned up 12 pipe bombs and explosives attached to remote control cars, which in a report last night that I saw is an Al-Qaeda trick. It's one of the things that they do. They use parts from the remote controlled cars as detonators on these devices. And there is not only an app, but they say there's an app for everything. There really is an app for everything. There is some sort of app that they use on a cell phone to set this off, or there's some sort of way using cell phones that they can set these off using parts from the remote controlled cars as detonators. And it's just the more that they learn and the more that they use in these attacks, it's just, it's nothing short of evil. It really isn't. And again, I think that the president here is probably the only person in this nation right now who is not clear as to whether or not this was an act of terrorism. And it's probably one of the main things that the FBI is, that one of the main possible motives that they are looking at this point. And you know, again, people are talking about Saeed Farouk, the man who was a county employee. He worked in one of these buildings, and that he had been at the party, and they thought that he looked at as though he had left the party early, that he was angry. He had left a jacket there, and about 2 weeks before, people had reported that that he had kind of gotten into a disagreement with a fellow employee about religion, and that at times people reported that the discussion was fairly heated. And But I don't know that one. And ironically enough, one of the people who were killed in this shooting was in fact the employee that he had gotten into the heated discussion about religion with. So we don't know, you know, whether or not he was targeted. He was just, you know, it was random that he just happened to be one of those who was killed in this attack. You know, we don't know. But again, authorities are looking at the money trail here, because given all of the items that have been found in the home, and I'm sure they're continuing to find more, that they said that as part of the investigation, they're trying to piece together the money trail that enabled the suspects to acquire over $30,000 worth of guns and explosives. And according to public records, Saeed Farouk, as a county employee, made approximately $51,000 a year as an employee of the San Bernardino County Department of Public Health. So, and there is no evidence that his wife had a job. So they are trying to piece together just where their funding was coming from. How would they have been able to afford $30,000 worth of this equipment based on a guy who made a little over 50 grand a year? And again, they are also looking possibly at a third person involved who did the purchasing of the firearms and possibly some of the other, the rounds of ammunition and things of that nature. That will be coming out more probably in the coming weeks and months. Of course, liberal politicians, liberals in general, were the first ones to you know, say, well, we don't really know whether or not that this is this workplace violence, is this terrorism. We just don't know. Well, yeah, we do know. They also, of course, most liberal Democrat politicians wasted no time in shouting about more gun control. And the thing with that is that right now, and again, we're very early in the investigation, but by all indications, any of the firearms that Saeed Farouk purchased, he purchased legally as an American citizen exercising his Second Amendment rights. So there really was no, as of right now, we don't, and again, this is a very fluid story. Things are changing very quickly. As of right now, there is no way that, no gun laws that are on the books right now would have prevented him from buying these firearms. And California has some of the strictest gun laws in the nation. And so I think that's definitely it's something that's being ignored by liberals. It's being ignored by the liberal media, you know, because it's a glaring example that their policies are not working, that they keep yelling for stricter gun control laws and just basic gun control in general. I think we know that if liberals had their way, there would be no Second Amendment and there would be no law-abiding gun-owning citizens who don't normally carry out these kind of attacks, because they have respect for the Second Amendment, B, they have respect for their firearms and how to care for them, how to use them properly, and all that that entails. And but the president, when he was in Paris earlier in the week it's the global warming summit, but liberals don't like to talk about global warming anymore. They have a new name for it now. They call it climate change. Well, you know, it's sunny right now today where I am. A week ago, it rained for 4 days straight. Wouldn't that be climate change? Please correct me if I'm wrong. But the president, of course, was another one who wasted no time in calling for more gun laws, more stringent gun laws, again, given the fact that California has some of the most stringent gun laws on the books. But one of the things he said while he was in Paris, keep in mind, we just saw one of these horrific shootings in Paris, 3 weeks ago, and this is what he had to say.
With respect to Planned Parenthood, obviously my heart goes out to the families of those impacted. I mean, Nancy, I say this every time we've got one of these mass shootings. This just doesn't happen in other countries. You know, we are rightly determined to prevent terrorist attacks wherever they occur, whether in the United States or with friends and allies like France. And we devote enormous resources, and properly so, to rooting out networks and debilitating organizations like ISIL, and maintaining the intelligence and improving the information sharing that can identify those who would try to kill innocent people. And yet, in the United States, we have the power to do more to prevent what is just a regular process of gun homicides. That is unequaled by multiples of 5, 6, 10. And I think the American people understand that. So my hope is that once again, this spurs a conversation and action, and I will continue to present those things that I can do administratively, but in the end of the day, Congress, states, local governments are going to have to act in order to make sure that we're preventing people who are deranged or have violent tendencies from getting weapons that can magnify the damage that they do. And with respect to Planned Parenthood, I think it's clear, I've said it before, they provide health services to women all across the country, have for generations. In many cases, it's the only organization that provides health services to impoverished women. And I think it's fair to have a legitimate, honest debate about abortion. I don't think that's something that is beyond the pale of our political discussion. It's a serious, legitimate issue. How we talk about it, making sure that we're talking about it factually, accurately, and not demonizing organizations like Planned Parenthood, I think is important.
So the president, while he is still in Paris for the climate change, aka global warming summit, he is in a city that just 3 weeks prior to this experienced one of the worst mass shootings in their history, and going on about how mass shootings don't happen in other countries, just in the United States. And everyone in that room, even liberal media reporters and French media, were all scratching their heads going, what are you talking about? They couldn't get their heads around it. And but again, this, you know, even this statement that he made in Paris prior to the shooting on Wednesday, all of the things that he said in that statement, he no doubt said again after the shooting occurred on Wednesday and into Thursday and today. And because it's gun control is one of the first and foremost issues for liberals. And if there is any way, and in fact, I saw something, I believe yesterday, that the president is going to try to issue some executive orders, and we all know what that means. I guess that means he gets out the pen and the phone and bypasses Congress and the American people and everything else that he can possibly bypass to enact some sort of gun control, that he is going to do whatever an executive order encompasses, he's going to attempt to do that. And so be on the lookout for that. And the response to that I'll get to in a second. Excuse me, a couple other stories I have here. But, not only can the president not utter the words radical Islamic terrorism, the mainstream media, the Obama zombies in the mainstream media, his propaganda wing, they really can't do it either. And conservative author, commentator, activist Pamela Geller, she was on Newsmax TV earlier this week, and what she said here is basically true. She said that the news media are essentially agreeing with Islamic law in their failure to call the San Bernardino shootings terrorism. And what she said was, quote, this is the pattern we see repeatedly. It is a Sharia-compliant media, and what I mean by that is under the Sharia, under Islamic law, you cannot criticize or offend Islam. And I think she has a good point here. That's exactly what they do. And in fact, there was a CNN video. I couldn't get the audio for it, but it was a reporter, I believe, from CNN, and he was speaking with the widow of the man who Saeed Farouk had, the fellow employee, his coworker, that he had gotten into the religious discussion about. And he all but came out and asked this man's widow, well, because of this discussion, because of the fact that this man confronted Saeed Farouk about his religion and about what they advocate and about what they teach, do you think that maybe this guy kind of brought it on himself? Do you think that maybe he was kind of to blame? So the media is going to do everything they can to blame everyone but the perpetrators of this crime. They're going to blame someone who got into a religious discussion with him. They're going to blame the NRA. They're going to blame Republicans for not going along with gun control. They're going to blame everybody that they can possibly blame so that they don't have to utter the words radical Islamic terrorism, because that's what it is. And the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, which is a pretty highly suspect organization, I believe, they were out in front of this very early on Wednesday night. But one of the things that Pamela Geller said about this is that the media should have asked the Council on American Islamic Relations at their press conference on Wednesday night about calling for programs in mosques to teach against jihadist ideology. And I think that would be a fantastic idea. I think I think a lot of people would see that as a pretty good idea. And she also went on to talk about how social media has a role to play in this, and that they need to act more quickly to take down accounts that promote jihadism and that promote this kind of radical Islamic terrorism. And she went on to say, quote, Facebook is pretty quick in taking anti-jihad stuff down. I can tell you that. Anything they deem anti-Islamic, they take down pretty fast. There's a morally inverted world. There's an inability to think, and when you're unable to think, you're unable to make moral judgments. If you can't make a moral judgment, you can't tell the difference between right and wrong. That is the problem with the left, unquote. And she's absolutely right. And it's interesting because while they might be, while she says that, according to Pam Geller, that they are, Facebook and other social media outlets are quick to take down this sort of jihadist pro-terrorism content on their websites, they're also very quick to take down conservative content as well. So maybe there's a problem there with their balance. Maybe they need to balance things out a little bit more. But another thing here, that there is, again, there are so many levels to these types of stories. There's so many different angles and there's so many different avenues. And through reading and researching and studying about everything that is going on pertaining to this investigation, I did find one industry that President Obama has actually helped during his years in office, and that is, ironically enough, the gun industry. This was from a lot of this information is from the International Business Times, and it says that gun industry insiders are said to claim that gun companies view mass shootings like the one in San Bernardino as an opportunity to make lots of money as sales continue to break records. And you know what? That sounds really it sounds cold and it sounds harsh and it sounds uncaring and unfeeling, but it's true. The long and the short of it, the dark side of this, the facts bear this out. It says investors believe that this mass shooting in San Bernardino, California, will boost holiday gun sales. And when I get back, I'm going to give you some numbers here. Some of the numbers that these companies have recorded, and it's very eye-opening. It's very interesting. Plus, we have, again, we have the FBI doing a booming business that's kind of related to the gun industry story. The FBI doing a booming business in background checks. So we will get to all of it. Stay right where you are. We got plenty more to get to today before we wrap things up. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble, TGIF. Thanks for hanging out.
Santa baby, just slip a sable under the tree for me. Been an awful good girl, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa baby, a 54 convertible to light blue. I'll wait up for you, dear Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Think of all the fun I've missed. Think of all the fellas that I haven't kissed. Next year I could be just as good if you check off my Christmas list. Santa baby, I want a yacht, and really that's not a lot. Been an angel all year, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa honey, one little thing I really need, the deed to a platinum mine, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Santa cutie, and fill my stocking with a duplex and checks. Sign your X on the line, Santa cutie, and hurry down the chimney tonight. Come and trim my Christmas tree with some decorations bought at Tiffany. I really do believe in you. Let's see if you believe in me. Santa baby, forgot to mention one little thing, a ring. I don't mean on the phone, Santa baby, so hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry down the chimney tonight. Hurry tonight.
We're back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I am Becky Noble. Thank you, everybody, for hanging out with me, TGIF, of course. And what else but the horrific massacre, I don't know what else you could call it, place in San Bernardino, California this week. I believe right now the death toll stands at 15, 20 people injured, plenty of people still hospitalized with their injuries, and you know, before I go any further, we've talked about so much about it today that, and I guess maybe when you get passionate about something and you want to talk about it and you want to talk about all angles of it, we can't forget the fact that, that there's a lot of families here that are going to be missing a loved one now at Christmas. And so I think just keep all of these people in your thoughts and your prayers and, you know, hope that they get through the investigation. Granted, the suspects here are dead. Maybe that is a little comfort to them. But that, you know, that I don't know, through some leadership maybe in the future that we can prevent some more things like this happening. But before the break, I was talking about, and it said it really seems kind of harsh and cold, but it's a reality. Businesses are in business to make money, and there are no exceptions to that. Gun makers are no exception to that rule. They sell guns in order to make a profit and to make money. And unfortunately, when things like this occur, they make more money. And it's actually the one industry, ironically enough, that Barack Obama has helped. And some of the numbers here that are, this is according to CNBC, citing numerous worldwide sources, some of the financials here of the gun industry. The gun and ammunition manufacturing industry garners annually a revenue of $13.5 billion with a $1.5 billion profit. Gun and ammunition stores post annual revenue of $3.1 billion with a $478.4 million profit. The estimated number of guns in the U.S. is 270 to 310 million. The number of full-time jobs related to the firearm industry is 263,223. That is up from 209,750 in 2012. The estimated overall economic impact of the firearms and ammunition industry in the U.S. is $42.9 billion. So this is it's a big deal. And the stock of some of these companies also rose after Wednesday's tragedy. Stock in Connecticut-based Sturm and Ruger jumped more than 1.5% on Thursday to $53.43 a share. Shares in Smith & Wesson Holding Corporation, which is based in Massachusetts, they are the maker of Sigma semi-automatic pistols, jumped nearly 3% to $18.85 a share. And so this is it's profitable because every time something like this happens and the president goes to the podium and talks about gun control, there's a lot of Americans, there's a lot of decent, hardworking, law-abiding, gun-owning citizens in this country that don't believe him for a minute, and what they believe that his ultimate goal is to take away their Second Amendment rights and to take away their guns. And that's where organizations like the NRA and Safari Club International, Gun Owners of America, National Association for Gun Rights, those kind of groups do their lobbying on Capitol Hill to make sure that people's Second Amendment rights are not taken away. And one of the things that a quote here from this guy in this piece here, his name is Lee Fang of The Intercept. And one of the things that he says that despite the public outrage over gun violence since the 2012 shootings at Sandy Hook, gun companies' business has boomed this year, and investors generally expect sales jumps when politicians call for tougher gun laws, it's reported. And my question is it really public outrage over gun violence, do liberals just yell louder about gun control than conservatives do about their Second Amendment rights because they do depend on groups like the NRA and things of that nature, to do the yelling and screaming for them? And again, another related story to this, this is from Newsmax, I believe. Black Friday broke an FBI record for the number of firearm background checks. The agency said on Tuesday of this week that it processed 185,345 background checks. That's roughly 2 per second. Let that sink in a minute. 2 background checks per second on the same day that 3 people were killed and 9 others wounded in an attack at the Planned Parenthood office in Colorado. The FBI received about 5% fewer background check requests on Black Friday 2014. And it goes on to say the previous record for the most background checks in a single day was December 21st, 2012, about a week after the Sandy Hook shootings. And again, after each one of these shootings, the president comes out and talks about gun control. And after the Planned Parenthood shooting in Colorado, the quote from the president was, quote, enough is enough. to do that, we need to do something about the easy accessibility of weapons of war for people who have no business wielding them. Well, we already have background checks, and we already have the problem is that the gun laws that are on the books are not being enforced, and that's what needs to happen. We don't need more. We don't need more laws. We need more enforcement is what we need. But I got some stories here also too that because of our coverage of the shooting in San Bernardino, maybe I'll hold these over until next week and we'll talk about them. Russia is banning all organizations that are under the George Soros umbrella. Russia, of all places. Do they know something that we don't know? We know it. We just don't, again, we don't want to talk about it. And all of the talk about Black Lives Matter, all of the things that went on recently at the University of Missouri and other campuses around the nation. In Australia, this is from the Australian News Service, that there are white student unions springing up at all over on campuses in Australia, and are they coming here? And some of the things that people are saying about them, and apparently if you're white and you want to start a student union for some reason, by virtue of the color of your skin, that's racist. But like I said, I'll hold those over maybe until next week, and we'll get into them then and talk about them then. But, you know, it's we need something a little light here. So here you go. Fans of A Christmas Story, the movie, will start the bidding on Tuesday for the chance to celebrate the season by staying in the Cleveland house made famous by the popular 1983 holiday film. The winning bidder can expect two nights and 2 days with up to three guests at the 120-year-old house used in exterior shots for the film, whose interior was restored to look like the movie family's home. The auction on eBay begins on Tuesday night and runs for a week. The winner can stay at the house on December 24th and 25th and at a luxury hotel on December the 26th. Among the possibilities are spending Christmas Eve sleeping in the bedroom of the movie's 9-year-old Ralphie Parker, who dreams of getting a Red Ryder air rifle for Christmas. Winners can also bask in the glow of the major award the family patriarch wins in the film, a lewd leg lamp his wife unceremoniously dispatches. Proceeds from the 5th annual auction benefit the Christmas Story House Foundation, which provides grants for restoration and upkeep of homes in the Cleveland neighborhood. Winning bids have ranged from $3,000 to nearly $6,000. We've had a variety of people stay here, said Steve Sidlicky, executive director of the Christmas Story House and Museum. Last year it was a couple. We have had a family of four, and once it was just one guy. The house and museum have film props, costumes, memorabilia, and hundreds of behind the scenes from the movie based on Gene Shepard's stories about the Northwest Indiana of his youth. More than 45,000 people visit the house each year, most in the weeks leading up to Christmas, Sidlicky said. So, the bidding starts on eBay Tuesday night. So, go ahead, people. I triple dog dare ya. With that, I am out of here. Please go to theconservativecauldron.blogspot.com. Please go to theblacksphere.net. Kevin Jackson, myself, and lots of other talented, amazing people writing lots of fabulous things there for you to peruse and to consider. And you can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/BeckyNoble, and on Twitter @PatriotWitch. Everyone have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next time.